Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Scuttlebucks begins on a down note after that dud of a game in which the Bucks get blown out on the road in Minneapolis. Tom Lang, my cohort over here, was at that game. At least he got to go to a fun city this time of year.
I don't know that I want to admit that I was there.
Case Keenum wishes he could see that Bucks off coverage every week. He'd be a superstar. My man throwing for 370 yards and three touchdowns. It was a disgusting game, especially defensively, really throughout. There's not much to write home about here. I don't have to tell you that. You guys watch the game. You know the deal. Some things to be perturbed about, but I think some things to be alarmed about, more importantly. You know, you look around the league, people lose games. Good teams lose games to bad teams beat good teams, and everything in between. And one week, a team could look like a Super Bowl contender, and the next week, ass sorry. I got it. So, in and of itself, a loss, you just go, well, the NFL's a salary cap league. Teams are built to go 8-8, and they're going to have their good and their bad and everything in between, and you move on if you're not an alarmist. When you become an alarmist is when you watch this team lose half their personnel on defense, which is what happened to Tampa Bay, some of it going into this game that we didn't know about until inactives were released, and then some of it, you know, in the game, obviously, they were dropping like flies. It was a MASH unit on Sunday, and you know, you can right the ship if you've got your guys. You learn from it. You watch the film. Coaches adjust. Players adjust. It sticks in your craw. You come out motivated, effort, the whole deal. You don't want to get embarrassed. These guys are pros and prideful. So you expect, all right, we'll see a good effort this week. Well, you may not be able to get stops if you're to your second and third string guys. When you're having to pick people up because you don't have enough guys to fill the segment, well, you got a problem.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the inactives list, it was Brent Grimes that was the headliner for being inactive because he was in Minneapolis. You know, he was around the team. He was Miko was up there. I mean, the whole nine. He was there in Minneapolis, and it was a game-time decision, I guess. But I know in the Tampa Bay side of the press box, it was a bit of a shocker for the media that was there. Was for me, obviously. And then Chris Baker obviously didn't make the trip because he was a victim of the flu bug that was going around the locker room last week, and Kwan couldn't play because of the hamstring, so he didn't make the trip. Yeah, so you're losing a player at each level.
And then David gets hurt.
Your best player at level two, and then your best cover corner. Then David getting hurt and the period of time that he got hurt is another eyebrow raiser for me. That game's over. There's no reason. I get it. There aren't that many players, period.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, who are you going to replace him with?
But, well, given that Kwan Alexander is out, maybe you got Glanton and Bond and Beckwith. You know, I don't know that 54 needs to be out there. I don't know that 93 needs to be out there when you're down 17 and you just turned it over deep in enemy territory with 6 minutes to go. I'm sure you can find somebody to line up out there. The NFL isn't a league unless you're Jacksonville running a fake punt up 37-0, where people are going to try and rub your face in it necessarily in that situation. Minnesota had long won the game. To me, the stunning thing was how far off our defensive backs play against their receivers. I had said when we had done W's and L's weeks ago and projecting the first four games of the season, well, the Bucs aren't going to have nearly the same problem with the Vikings because they can cover better. No, they can't. They're either not schemed to be able to cover better or plainly they just cannot cover better. But when you're giving 10, 15-yard cushions pre-snap,
like
then you backpedal after the snap, you have zero chance. I mean, I wonder how many times Thielen and Diggs just broke off their route and said, let me just sit down right here because I've got a putting green around me with no one else on the field.
Unfortunately, they didn't sit down their routes enough because every time I looked up, it's 40 and 50 yards down the field. They didn't stop for nothing. I mean, Stephon Diggs, 8 receptions, 173 yards and 2 touchdowns. Imagine if they weren't blowing the Bucs out and they had to keep throwing. That would have been 300 yards receiving.
Well, man, in the flow of the game, when it was actually still a game before it was a foregone, and then it got interesting 31-17 because Minnesota really had a boneheaded series in a key moment, but we didn't make them pay for it. They could have thrown for 500 or 600 yards. I mean, Keenum left about 100 yards out there. There was a missed post down the middle of the field to Stephon Diggs.
That's a touchdown, yeah.
It is an awful throw, plainly an awful throw. Then there's a throw to Rudolph later in the game over the middle of the field that's 20 or 30 yards, and then there's a couple others that he missed as well, but two headliners. It was just you know how sometimes it feels like it's a high wire act in an NFL game, you know?
And, sure, yeah.
And there's a lot of danger here, but let's see if we can hold it together for just this one series as a critical moment. When the Bucs survived critical moments, it was because the Vikings self-inflicted wounds. It was because of holding calls on long runs that eventually set up a third and long or a second long, and then the Bucs can play at least in front of them and play soft shell coverage somewhat successfully. It wasn't because the Bucs got off the field in key moments. It was because the Vikings shot themselves in the foot that this game went as long as it did.
One of the things that really bothered me about this game, and I think it's inevitable that you're going to see the interceptions and the turnover numbers when you're down on the road by as much as Tampa Bay was down and you're forced to throw on every down. And I know Dirk Koetter, and we're going to hear from him here in a second, goes through and gives you the timing of when, in essence, they abandon the run. That's fine. But one of the reasons they also abandoned the run was because they couldn't run. I mean, they're not going to be able to run the football with Rodgers and Sims and the group that they have back there right now. Those guys just aren't any good. At best, Rodgers gives you the role of a backup for a game if you need him. You know, okay, he won't be just pitiful. He'll be okay. But these guys aren't very good. And without Doug Martin, we said before the season, all right, you're missing your guy for three games. Can you go 2-1 in those games? And frankly, I don't care if you win by one, lose by one, win by 50, lose by 50. You got to go 2-1 through the first three. And so we're still there. We're at that place. But I do know this, for the people that are alarmist about interceptions, etc., if you ask Jameis Winston to throw it 40 times on the road while your team's down more than two scores, and you're going to run the ball with a running back, a total of seven times, you can't win. The world knows you're throwing. That's a good secondary. The world knows you're throwing, and you've abandoned the run. You're on the road against that secondary, and you don't expect to throw picks. I'm not excusing away bad reads. I'm not excusing away the underthrow where he's got a touchdown and it's going to make it 14-10. He's got to make that throw. I'd like my receiver to fight for the ball occasionally, D-Jack. But, okay, I got to make that throw. He does. So, Jameis is not devoid of mistakes. One of those picks is hideous. One's a terrible decision. And one may not have been a finished route. That said, I don't know that you can expect any other result if you're going to be this imbalanced. That's the problem. Here's Dirk Koetter talking about that.
Well, I also say all the time that every game takes on its own personality, and this game is no different. We did run it six out of the first 13 plays of the game, and the key play in the game was 5 minutes to go in the half. It was 14-3. We had a wide open DeSean Jackson. It's going to make it 14-10. Instead, it's intercepted. They go on a 92-yard drive, and now it's 21-3. We go in at halftime, try to regroup. We come out. We go three and out. They hit a 59-yard touchdown pass. Now it's 28-3. Hard to run the ball after that. I mean, you just don't have very many opportunities because you don't have enough possessions.
Coach, could you kind of go through those three interceptions by Jameis or what sure, you've seen now sure. that you looked at
it? Yeah, the first one, again, that's a touchdown. That's a 14-point swing right there, the way it ended up. I mean, that's a 7-point swing, and DeSean smoked that guy, and Jameis got to get it out there for him, plain and simple on that. The second interception is we were driving. We were back to within two scores. We were across the 50 on the plus 45, and it was a poor read. All right, it was a poor read as far as we had a good man zone indicator there. Jameis missed the read, tried to force it in there to DeSean. He had to step up, had a little bit of pressure, tried to force it in there. Just not going to work. And then on the third interception, you know, now we're down 17 points. We probably don't have enough possessions. And Jameis tried to force it into Mike. You know, just got to check that ball down. So I think at one point in the second half, Jameis was something like 18 out of 22. So 18 out of 22, I'm talking in the second half now, two incompletions and two interceptions. I mean, so Jameis made some really nice plays, some really nice throws. But, just the main thing is, as an offense, we can't turn it over. And that those kind of things have a tendency to happen more when you're playing from behind and you're playing in a more desperate situation than you would like to.
Playing from behind is also code for when you're not balanced. And he didn't want to say that because then he would have trampled on his point. He's right in some areas there, too. The problem is when they did run it, yeah, he talks about running it six out of 13 times to start the game. You know what they averaged on those runs? I mean, you were there. You saw. I mean, you could throw a wild guess.
Well, sure. I saw two runs in the game where I said, all right, about 3 or 4 yards.
That's
there we
right.
go. Keep
yeah.
us in front of the chains.
Yeah, it was under 3.5 yards per carry. Yeah. So they couldn't run the ball when they did run it. And so there was – and I'm not just talking about the choice not to run it, to completely abandon it. I think at 21-3, you can run the – I mean, what was it, 21-3, yeah.
31-17 is also a key sequence in the game, too.
Yeah, at 21-3, you can't give up on the run. At 31-17, you don't have to give up on the run. There are moments in the game where they could have run, but I think they realized they weren't going to have success because they don't have running backs in there that are any good. And why Sims plays, I have no idea. But the point would be, at this juncture, it's going to be important to get him back, but you got to survive this game coming up. You're down personnel. Your defense is probably going to give up points. You know, your running back situation is not going to be great. You're going to have to win a shootout this weekend.
Yeah, to me, again, you know, the first part of the discussion was about what's wrong with the defense and the problems, the many, many, many problems. I mean, I think Dirk even said it in his initial press conference on Sunday. Well, you can't cover and you can't get to the pass rusher. That's a hell of a combination.
Hell of a combination.
So, yes, they're going to go up and down the field. By some magic, the Bucs are still in this game in the second half. They could have
been
scored on every
possession.
I'll tell
you the magic. It's the completion percentage he just cited. It's the 18 of 22 throwing the ball over the lot and scoring touchdowns to get you back to a two-score game.
Correct, but he killed you twice. He killed you twice. I mean, at 14, Dirk's absolutely right about that. Now, the 14.
I said he was right about the 14-3 interception. That's going to be 14-10. It's a game-changing situation. Jameis has to make that throw.
The 14-point swing, though, is a load of crap because it's a 93-yard drive that they
go on in two minutes.
14-point swing my ass.
Yeah.
You got to make it.
Can you stop somebody?
For 90 yards? That drive could have gone 160 yards.
I just think the other two interceptions are where I take up issue because you're going to throw on every down because you have to throw on every down because you've abandoned the run and you're trailing by a lot, and that's when quarterbacks are going to force things that look ugly. When they don't work out, you go, well, that's ugly. But he was forcing things before that where they were working out. He fit some ball in some windows. With that 18 of 22 we're talking about,
yeah,
there's some great throws in there that are ill-advised. He's just trying to make a play.
Correct.
So this is the problem with not having balance.
The Brate touchdown is into a really tight window. I thought the best throw of the day was the Jackson throw last play of the third quarter. In fact, that's the best management of the day, is the clock's running down. Jameis is well aware you got to score now.
Now.
You got to score now. Psychologically, going into the fourth quarter at 31-17 is completely different, and he was right. Because Zimmer, whatever he advised his play caller to do the next series, was they puckered up. You could throw vertically the entire game.
And
if I'm a Vikings
not
fan,
to.
I go, you're throwing a swing pass and you're calling a run? What the hell is wrong with you? We have 15 yards of play down the middle of the field anytime we want on this sad sap secondary, Tampa Bay.
The only thing I'll say about that is it is funny because I agree with you, but I thought of this when he did that, I went, woo, getting a little tight. But then I started laughing. I thought, you know, these coaches can't win for losing sometimes, admittedly, to make fun of myself for a second. When guys abandon the run with a two-score lead, sometimes we're like, are we just not going to run the ball today?
No, but it's a special circumstance
I understand. But it's funny.
But your quarterback kills you in this game, but the defense, is the number one focus. It's just the decision-making. I mean, I grant you, he fits balls into these little windows while we're trying to build back and go from 20 to 20, and it's to Humphries, it's to Brate,
it's to
Evans.
I agree with you. I'm saying this game is lost because the defense can't cover my children. So this is not the time to kill Winston. This game's not on him. This game's on that defense that gave Keenum a chance at the Hall of Fame.
I think it's the time to kill everybody involved here because whether or not you should have been in the game at 31-17, you are in the game at 31-17, and you go down, you score 31-24. I'll tell you, the building was already on edge. The building was already on edge in that moment. You score there, and the coach just showed you that he's going to pucker. You've got a chance with momentum in the game down 31-24. I got you. Priority one is the defense couldn't stop anything
Diggs
at all.
Averaged over 20 yards a reception.
It could have been more.
Thielen had 100 yards receiving.
Could have been more, absolutely.
When a team talks about balance, Dalvin Cook had nearly 100 yards rushing, and for the most part, the Bucs shut him down. So you're looking at a team that throws for nearly 400 yards, and yet the tailback nearly rushes for 100. He's well over 100 when you look at all-purpose yards.
Mm-hmm.
What it tells you is that Minnesota did whatever they wanted to do, and just pretty much whatever they wanted to do. To me, we'll start with coaching. We'll start with some personnel problems that I don't know that we can change. This is going to be a problem moving forward until you draft better people. And that's not a referendum on the previous drafts, because they've addressed needs. They've done a good job by and large of the draft. Sure would like to have the pick in the second round back.
Sure. Yeah, but the Aguayo pick. Yeah.
But that said, that's a problem when you're a team building towards something. It means you're still lacking something. And we're going to get frustrated when those things are exposed. We may have whiffed at one of the corners in the draft.
Well,
and I think there's some things are getting exposed. It doesn't mean the direction of the organization and everything else isn't upwardly mobile. It just means you've got some personnel issues that I don't know that you can overcome. And if you're going to marry that with injuries, we got problems.
Exactly. There is a perfect storm element to this.
Sure.
And if you're classifying problems as long-term problems within 60 minutes of one game problems,
right.
The long-term problem is the defense. The shorter-term issue is the quarterback. I got you. Jameis isn't going to be the problem consistently week to week. The defense is the bigger concern. It's just if you're afforded a chance, however unlikely, you got to press it. You got to press it and force Minnesota to prove that, you know, they're not going to pucker up to the point where you're going to have the ball down 31-24. You're so close, and you shouldn't by any rights be. But when we talk about the greats, you go, well, how the hell did that happen?
Right,
are you kidding me?
Well,
they had no business winning this football game, and they just did because they have that guy.
Well, and let's be clear. I know people can hear it. I'm obviously of the mindset that long-term you've got your franchise quarterback, but I'm not under any illusion that I think he's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's not Tom Brady. I mean, so, yeah, you're not going to get that. That most of the time when that happens, we go, well, freaking Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
No, he's not there.
Right.
So I don't want anybody to think I think that.
With Hargraves, maybe they know something from practice, but I'd like to see the guy fail in man coverage, pressed up closer to the line of scrimmage. Because, I mean, even dating back to this preseason, remember when Henny comes in the Jacksonville game and everybody's booing Bortles, he comes in. And there's either two drops or there's a drop and an overthrow, back-to-back post routes. He's backpedaling. He gets burned on a simple man coverage.
Right.
Is that IQ? Is that technique?
Well,
is that what they're calling defensively?
I think they might know he can't play, man. And what are we going to do? We've invested this money and that pick in him. You're going to play him.
Well, okay, but why did you draft him? You drafted him because he is a physical corner who gets in your face. It wasn't for the 40 time that you drafted this guy. His 40 time was slow.
Slow by way of corners. Yes, here's your problem. He was very physical in college, but he's not a big guy. So you get to the league. This is a classic case where maybe you can manhandle college receivers. These are grown-ass men out here in the NFL. I'm not so sure.
If you can't be physical on Adam Thielen, then you don't belong in the league.
Well,
period.
There you go. Well, it's not like Adam Thielen doesn't have success against other corners. Adam Thielen's a good player.
But physicality. This isn't Dez Bryant against.
Here's I think as we talk this out loud, you just brought up an interesting point about his 40 time. Okay, here's where you can get away with that in college, not the pros. The problem he has is if he's going to come up and be physical at the line of scrimmage, if he gets beat off the line, he does not have any makeup speed. So he's scared to death to get beat off the line. Because if it happens, he's not winning a foot race. He's not catching Thielen or anybody else, as we saw. So I think he's probably reluctant to go up and be as physical as you'd like him to be, because physically he is a tough guy.
Yes.
I agree with that. But he's not a super fast guy.
Well, see, but the issue with me, and maybe it is his defense mechanism firing in his own head. I'll allow for that. But if you look constantly in this game, and Dirk even talked about we played too soft, we played too far back, the cushions were crazy. He is still backpedaling when a receiver is making his break.
Yeah, you can't play that way. If you're backpedaling, you're dead.
Backpedaling in general.
Yes.
Why do we teach backpedaling?
I don't know that we do. I mean, you're right, it was on display.
Smith is doing it on the other side of the field.
My guess in this game, with the injuries they had, realizing they couldn't get pressure on Case Keenum, knowing that Stephon Diggs is a weapon.
Yeah.
Dylan's a pretty good too, right? I mean, he's not a bad player.
Yeah.
They realized the best bet for them was try to keep everything in front of them. This is my guess as to Smith's thinking. Keep everything in front of you.
They'll do well against the run.
That's right.
Even though the first drive, they got blown off the ball.
Right. But they're thinking, we can pretty much shut down the run, keep in the passing game, make Case Keenum beat us with repeated good throws. Keep everything in front of us. Try to bend but don't break, come up and tackle, And you know what? You might have a chance here if you give up 24 points or something like that to win this thing 27-24 or something like that. I think with those injuries, some of which we didn't know about going in,
right,
the thought was really kind of, all right, now, guys, this could get ugly in a hurry. Let's try to keep it in front of us. But it didn't work.
I think the damning thing, though, here, it's a couple of things. I agree with you. In theory, that makes total sense. But when you're showing like a four deep look, whether or not you actually run that or not, rotating something else. But when you show two high safeties and the corners are playing off before the snap, why are you backpedaling at the snap?
You know what I mean? It's very weird.
So when they're breaking off on the routes underneath, there's still nobody near them. They're not, as Jimbo says up here, they're not pulling the pin. They're not triggering on the ball. So they can operate underneath all day. It's not as though he's trying to make tight window throws underneath. These are wide open throws. It's almost like they're allowing for an 8-yard completion per play.
Just frustrating. So now, man. It's very frustrating, but it's one game. And so what I don't want to do is be overly reactionary. There's plenty to react to in an ass kicking. And this was nothing short of an ass kicking. But the Bucs just delivered one of those against a team that went on the road and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Correct.
So this is the oddity of the league. And you got to be quick to discard these games and say, okay, all right, it happened. It's not good. Hopefully you learn from it and move to the next one and get this win. If the Bucs are 2-1 through three games, we're fine. Everything's fine. But you got to get this win.
I agree. Things are much more hunky-dory next week on the Scuttlebucks.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to worry because
there's some personnel we can't.
Correct. The number one thing that I saw in the first quarter that shocked me when you're just talking about the defense one more time. Is Diggs is not on Hargraves. He's on Smith, you know, who they could have torched at any point. But they decide to go Thielen Hargraves. And you would think, as much of a matchup league as the NFL is, that you would pick on the newbie and you wouldn't pick on the guy that's
right past him.
That's what I'm saying.
Right past him.
They didn't even care that Smith and Diggs were. They said, well, we can have that. Let's find out if we can have this.
We can have our cake and eat it, too. We'll do anything we want.
Scrolling up and down the damn field.
Well, and also, by the way, on that Thielen catch, the first one, the very first long bomb, I mean, he's interfered with and everything. And then,
right.
I mean,
well,
just
and Keenum did throw four or five, I mean, absolute dimes.
Of course he did. You know why? Well, because he knew he was never going to be under pressure.
He's not afraid.
If you're not going to get hit, you'll stand tall all day long. I mean, he is. I mean, there are only so many starting quarterback jobs in the world. He is a guy that on this day was a starting quarterback, which means that if you can stand there all day, you're of the requisite talent to be able to make throws to open people.
You know, they announced the third quarter, that Diggs had broken the receiving record against the Bucs.
Of course he did.
Right? The all-time receiving record. You know what I was stunned to find out? It was neither Randy Moss nor Chris Carter that had the most receiving yards against the Bucs in the series history. It was some dude I never heard of from the late 80s, early 90s. It wasn't even Jake Reed.
Wasn't Hassan Jones?
I don't believe so.
He's a Knoll. That'd have been cool.
Well, yes, but no, it was not him.
Scuttlebucks continues. Lee DeKemper will join us. Before we go to break, you should know that the Scuttlebucks is brought to you by, presented by Fan Retreat. FanRetreat.com is a great Florida company. That's a good thing. Also, FanRetreat.com is a one-stop shop for your tickets, right? So you can use FanRetreat.com to buy Bucks tickets or Knowles tickets or buy airline tickets, whatever it is. Book a hotel room as well.
Low overhead from FanRetreat.com.
And that makes it easier for them to compete with those low, low prices, which is a good thing. So you get the lowest price tickets. Check FanRetreat.com. Compared to, say, SeatGeek or StubHub, you'll find 95% of FanRetreat.com tickets are cheaper. And FanRetreat is a local company, as Tom just noted. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code at FanRetreat.com.
Sieging the Bay, one topic at a time. The Scuttlebucks return now on JoeBucksFan.com.
Continuing on the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, Tom Lang, and we welcome in Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. You know that. If you're listening to the Scuttlebucks, you likely found us on JoeBucksFan.com, because it's a great place to go and read about the Bucks. Hey, so Lee, do the Bucks have enough players? Can they field enough players to take on the Giants this weekend, at least defensively? Do they have a starting 11 that they can kind of put together?
That's a good question, because I don't think I've ever seen an NFL team physically got or physically being whipped like they were Sunday. They were physically beat up, and I mean that every sense of the word. They were beat up, whether it was McCoy, Noah Spence, obviously Lavonnie David, Robert Ayers. Grimes didn't play because he had a bum shoulder, although he was playing ping pong in the locker room today. So I don't know if that's any bearing on what happened Sunday, but he didn't have any problem playing ping pong, I saw. But, I mean, top to bottom, that defense, I mean, they got alley beaten. They got curb stomped. They had a lead pipe taken to them. It was a beatdown physically. I don't think I've ever seen – I certainly have never seen that covering the Bucs. I don't think I've ever seen that in my days as a sports reporter, a team that physically beat up. And not just that, but the meat of their lineup is beat up. Or their defense, I should say. You know, McCoy, obviously a stud. Noah Spence looked like he was going to come along and be the pass rusher they needed. He's gone for who knows how long. Obviously, Lavonnie David, who knows how long he's going to be out. Quan Alexander didn't make it because he had a previous hamstring issue. I'd be a little surprised if he played for the Giants. Not totally surprised, just a little bit. Obviously, Grimes with his shoulder. I mean, on down the line, these guys were beat up. Even Vernon Hargraves in the locker room. And I appreciate Tom coming up from Minnesota and helping us out. Tom, I don't know if Tom saw this, but Vernon Hargraves had bandages all up and down his shins just from his legs got gouged from being hit so much. I've never seen anything like it. It was like a MASH unit, like someone in a waiting line in the emergency room waiting for ambulances to take these guys away.
Did you ask Vernon if the bandages prohibited him from ever covering anybody?
I was going to wait for a one-liner like that.
Well, I'm just curious.
I'm going to chalk it up to a faulty defensive game plan. I think it's as simple as that. These guys, you know, for whatever reason, Mike Smith was having these guys with a lot of cushion. Even Cutter, kind of Monday, the day after the game, was kind of critical about that. It just, to me, it sounded like more than anything else is a faulty game plan. These guys, as Steve Isbeth, my business partner of JoeBucksFan.com, wrote Sunday night, he hasn't seen that much cushion since he walked through a Rooms to Go store.
It was bizarre. And certainly Stephon Diggs, did he write a thank you note? Did you get the kind words from the rest of that Minnesota offense, including Case Keenum, who played pitch and catch all afternoon? I mean, it's really embarrassing to watch that group go up there and look like they haven't played football, and then to get beat up physically while being torched. I mean, really every element of the game, you get undressed on defense especially, and that what that does is it puts undue pressure on an offense. And I'll grant you the offense make mistakes, but when you have no balance to your offense whatsoever and you throw the ball 40 times on the road and you run it 8, you can't win in the NFL that way. And so really everything about this speaks to a problem going up there from a coaching standpoint, but also, you know, the players didn't play well either. So this is a dud. But it's a weird year and a weird league, period. You look around the league, you'll see a team dominate another team, show you sign after sign that they're elite, and then turn around and lose to a bum. And then the following week, turn around. It happens all across the league. And so I don't panic in these situations about a loss or even an ugly loss. What I panic about, though, is the lack of personnel. You have a combination now of an injury-plagued defense and one that I think, frankly, is average in the secondary to begin with on their best day. So now you got real problems here because you can rebound from ugly losses, but if you don't have your starters and you don't have players and you're down to third-string guys – and you're trying to pick up guys off a scrap heap to survive, it's hard to win games. You can't really rebound then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I showed up at the stadium, I always try to get to the stadium 2 hours ahead of time, and the inactives are released per the NFL 90 minutes prior to kickoff. When I saw Grimes was inactive, I'm like, uh-oh, that's not good. I had no clue the secondary would collapse without him. I knew it would be a step down, maybe two steps down, perhaps three steps down. I didn't think it was going to be a collapse, and that's what it was. It was an absolute jailbreak collapse. But you hit the nail on the head. Injuries, I mean, losing and getting embarrassed is one thing, but a total physical beatdown, again, we can go through the list. McCoy, T.J. Ward, Lavonnie David, on and on and on and on. It's like, holy cow. And to me, and I wrote this Sunday night on JoeBucksFan.com, The glaring needs last offseason, there was three glaring needs. The Bucs addressed one of them heavily in the offseason. That was receivers, and whether it be Deshaun Jackson, whether it be O.J. Howard, Godwin, whatever. That was one of the three glaring needs this team had that they addressed. The other two needs they did not address. That was pass rush. That was running back. Oh, yeah, they drafted playbook Mick Snoop Dogg in the fifth round. We saw how that turned out. They didn't address running back. And as you pointed out, Jeff, when this offense is uneven, it's not good. Pass rush, and it's not just Jason Light, it's not just Dirk Cutter. This is an organizational issue. This has been going on for three different general managers' administrations, five different coaches. This team cannot, for whatever reason, develop an edge rush. Now, Noah Spence may have been that guy. We don't know because he can't get on the field. This team, for whatever reason, cannot scout, cannot see, cannot develop, cannot identify an edge rusher. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's a scouting issue. I don't know if it's a coaching issue. I don't know if it's a general manager issue. I don't know if it's all three. But for whatever reason, you know, there are some, for example, baseball organizations, they can't develop pitchers or they can't develop hitters. The Rays, for example, they can't develop hitters. Well, the Buccaneers, they can't develop edge rushers. For whatever reason, this has been going on for over a decade now since Simeon Rice left. And that really showed up Sunday. No running attack to speak of. And no edge rush. When Noah Spence walked off the field with injury, so too did the Bucs pass rush.
You know, it's weird, too. Let's not forget, they had Michael Bennett.
And
here's what I'll say, though. They had him and let him go. They didn't identify him in any way as a potential star in the league. And then, you know, there were enough people who watched the games closely to say, what are you doing letting Michael Bennett just kind of leave? And so it's not as if they haven't had guys. They just haven't had guys that they either properly identified and or, as you noted, developed. It's very confusing. The Spence situation is a wait and see situation. We don't know at the time that I'm talking to you right now, this podcast, we don't know whether he's going to be out long term or if it's just a couple of games or if he's going to be out at all. But obviously, especially when you know, Case Keenum, okay, we can talk about how he's had success against Tampa Bay before, but I dare say anybody would have had success with a pulse against the Bucs on Sunday because you couldn't get to him. He had all day to throw. He's throwing to Stephon Diggs and Thielen, and they got talent. So, you know, I don't know if it's Case Keenum as much as it is anybody who can identify an open receiver and has 7 seconds to get it to him.
Exactly. If you're going to give any kind of quarterback in the NFL time like that, and, oh, by the way, you give decent receivers, if not good receivers, a cushion like they were going to give him, that's a recipe for disaster, and we saw what happened.
Yeah, so what did Mike Smith have to say about the defensive game plan?
He was trying to put a positive spin on it. You know, we got to coach better, we got to play better. You know, we got to find guys who can make plays. So he really didn't say anything in depth. You know, he quote unquote, I'm not going to point any fingers. He was taking responsibility, but that was a faulty game plan. A casual observer can see that it was faulty. Now, how much he changed during the game, I don't know. Granted, the Bucs played a little bit better in the second half defensively. But, you know, they dug a hole for themselves with a faulty game plan. They were given cushions. I mean, you can, if a guy's given too much cushion, you got to identify that in one or two plays and correct that immediately. They didn't do that. So, to me, that tells me that was the game plan. Like, okay, give him cushion, we'll get the Case Keenum. Which didn't happen either.
Sounds kind of weird, but I'm just going to say it here as we wrap up talking with you, Lee. This is a critical game on Sunday. I would never
absolutely
usually say that, but a home game against a winless Giants team, you got to put them away because you got the Patriots on deck, and you're not going to beat the Patriots. Well, I'm not going to assume a win over the Patriots, although the Patriots have real problems on defense. Anyhow, that said, you probably are going to lose to Tom Brady if you can lose to Case Keenum. So let's just go ahead and assume that. Now, you can beat the Giants, and by hook or crook, you better. I don't know how you have to win this game 50-48, maybe. It seems like that's probably what's going to have to happen here.
Yeah.
But you got to win it because 2-1 in the NFL, you're fine. 2-2, you're fine. But you go 1-2, which leads to 1-3, and I believe we're on the cusp of a disappointing season at that point.
You're reading my mind, Jeff. I wrote this Monday morning. I wrote this. I said, this season, if they don't beat the Giants, this season very quickly and very rapidly can unravel in a matter of 10 days.
I agree with that.
It can unravel.
And I'm not a panic button guy in the league, but I'm telling you, I do have this sense, this feeling. They lose this game, they're in trouble. It's kind of a crossroads, at least within the season, kind of a crossroads game here. You kind of have to win this one.
I agree, and I'm to the point where, you know, I know the Bucs have doctors. So the doctors can say if Quan Alexander is ready to go or not. And I understand hamstrings are weird.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
They need this Giants game, as you said. I'd be tempted, given the fact that, you know, let's just write off the Patriots game. You know, okay, he's not going to play in the Patriots game. Get him on the field the Giants game, even if he's only on there for a half. That's better than nothing. Get him on the field. Get that Giants win, then Quan can rest for another 10 or 11 days for the next game. They need this Giants game. I'm willing to throw away the Patriots game. They need this Giants game. I don't think the Patriots is a winnable game. The Giants is a winnable game if they have the personnel. So I'd be tempted, although I would never ever otherwise do this, I'd be tempted to push Quan Alexander on the field, whether he's 100% or not, provided the doctors give him the green light.
Yeah, that's the hard part. I mean, hamstrings, I agree with you. If you got a blown-out shoulder and I can shoot you up and you risk, you know, if you got problems, you know, years from now, whatever. Hamstrings, though, that's a real hard deal because you got to be able to run. Got to be able to run. And I don't know if, if you're at half speed, it does you any good to have him on the field. You can still run like the wind blows with a blown-out shoulder. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
Here's
something to think about with the defense and Quan. In all last year, the Bucs talked about, the first half of the year, oh, we have communications issues. I can't say on the record what those were. We have a pretty good idea. We found out off the record what they were. Haven't had anybody deny it yet. But I can't say it because it paints some people in a very bad light. That could be construed in a very bad light, although it's not factual. Guy calls the plays on defense, Quan Alexander, who, by the way, the Bucs are 0-5 when he doesn't start.
Yeah, he's good.
He's 0-5. And guess who wasn't on the field Sunday, and they had a defensive class. Quan Alexander wasn't on the field. So I'm starting to wonder if 2-2 equals 4 here.
Oh, and plus, even if you didn't want to do the detective work here, just watch Quan Alexander play. He's a light. Yeah. I mean, he's a light, right? He's an energy. The players gravitate towards that. He's a playmaker. Yeah. He's emotional. He's physical. He's fast. He's electric. You got to have him without question. Hey, Lee, let's hold our breath. They get a win here. It'll be a more pleasant conversation next week. Be well, sir.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Have a good one.
All right, too. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. Tom, the oddity here is I never, and for our listeners that are new to the Scuttle Bucks and they don't know my daily show Monday through Friday in Tallahassee, we're not really, at least when it comes to the NFL, college is different, but alarmists. You know, I disagree with Lee about the, I don't think the Patriots game is winnable. I do. I mean, the Texans nearly beat them with a rookie quarterback. Yeah, it's winnable. Now, your defense is going to give up a gazillion points. But you can score on the Patriots. And I think the Giants may end up scoring plenty on the Bucs defense, but you're going to have to answer the call. It's a big game for Jameis. Big game for this offense. I think they have to carry the day.
Yeah. As I said in the earlier segment, you got to prove to me that you can consistently score in the upper 20s to mid-30s. You know, that's what we all expected what the season was going to be. But if the defense is going to play like it did last week, and that's going to be – because it happened last year, and we glazed over that. Not you and I. But, I mean, the talking point down there has largely been the defense carried this team the second half of last season. Well, okay. I understand the defense turned in some really good performances.
Oh, played better, yeah.
With, I mean, outgunned talent. Let's just say Mike Smith devised some bend but don't break principles. Turnover luck was great. And then third down defense was awesome, too, for the Bucs last year. I mean, in the mid-30s, they were number one in the league in getting people off the field in third down.
We ain't that this year.
But they were sieves. I mean, there were stretches of time last year. That Atlanta Falcons Thursday night game, remember that one?
Oh, unfortunately.
If they wanted to score on every possession, they could have.
They could have.
That's what this game was. That's what this game was. So the offense, what I'm telling you is complimentary football. You know, sometimes you play to the strengths of your team.
But we can't do that in Tampa because
you got to score every possession.
Well, you got to throw, is my point. You can't line up and run. That's the other problem you have here is that if you want to protect your defense, you keep them off the field. You possess the football, and you can do that in the running game. But we can't run the football. So you're screwed. Now you got to throw. And the whole world, if the league knows what we saw on Sunday is true, that the Bucs are going to have to throw the ball 40 to 50 times to beat you, and that they're going to, Dirk can say what he says about why they abandoned the run. I get what the score was. I understand that. You can't run the ball, in essence, 7-8 times in an NFL football game and expect that you're not going to turn it over, is my point. You could find a way to win, but you're going to turn it over. When teams know what's coming and they're in nickels and dimes all afternoon because they know you're not running the football, well, you're going to throw picks. And Jameis is already – inclined to throw some picks anyhow.
Yes.
So you're screwed because he's going to try to, he doesn't like to lose, and he's going to try to force the issue. None of this is marrying the two is what you're talking
Correct.
About, right?
No, you're going to have to be a mercenary on offense. I mean, you know, yeah. there are years, and you see it across sports, college and pro.
Maybe they'll run when Doug Martin comes back.
I think they will because there are lanes that are there. There are holes that are there. They're just not being seen consistently.
Those backs, boy. Ooh, that is the sorriest group of running backs in the National Football League. It's impossible. Flip around. You and I watch every game, the condensed version at the very least, of all of these. There's nobody with a dearth of running backs like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers without Doug Martin. And so when Doug comes back, I hope he stays healthy because you can call it a day otherwise. Scuttlebucks continues momentarily. Again.
Avast ye Scuttlebucks.
Scuttlebucks, presented by FanRetreat.com. That's a Florida company, people. Lowest price tickets. Check FanRetreat.com compared to SeatGeek, StubHub. You'll find 95% of FanRetreat.com tickets are cheaper. Let's listen to the defensive coordinator talking about something here that interests me, because if you're trying to guess personnel, sure sounds like the Bucs are going to be down a couple of linebackers this week against the Giants.
I thought the young linebacker continues to play well. He's seeing things for the first time, and they may get him the first time, but when they do it again, he's been in the right place. So he's been very impressive, and he's going to be the guy that we're going to count on for this week. He's got a bigger role potentially. He's got to, you know, have the communicator, and he'll have it the entire game, and that communication is going to be paramount with the no huddle that we're anticipating seeing from the Giants.
Coach, you were just talking about Kendall Beckwith getting the communication this week. Who had it last week?
Well, Levante David, until he was injured, and Kendall went in and finished the game. You know, we are able to change the helmet out because of the injury. So if the other two guys can't go, then Kendall's role steps up immensely. He becomes the voice of getting us set and getting everybody in the right place.
So what you take from that is this: if Quan's out there, then it's Quan. But it doesn't sound like he thinks Quan's going to be out there, and it doesn't sound like he thinks Levante David's going to be out there. So it's Kendall Beckwith now who takes over basically as the guy in charge, running the defense, getting the signals in his ear, and telling people where to line up, which really, again, think what you want about that. He's a good young linebacker, but what's disconcerting about it is that it appears you're going to be without two very important linebackers and a game against the Giants that, you know, you got a veteran quarterback who can move the football. Most teams are going to move the football fairly effectively against Tampa Bay, I do believe, this year. Certainly through the air, it's a little disconcerting.
Well, you can't underscore enough, the value of Brent Grimes and what he'll bring from a coverage standpoint, because it's competent, and we need to find out.
He's a professional.
We need to find out how competent it is in other areas and soon. But to me, I think this is obviously, it's a big loss because Quan, just from sideline to sideline, is unbelievable, and Levante had just gotten done saying last week, looks like a much younger version of himself this season. So it's a loss by definition. You're losing one of your best defenders on the field, especially with 58. But at the same time, I would think your base personnel this week is only going to feature two linebackers most of the time.
A lot of nickel.
I mean, the Giants like to spread you out. They throw the ball more than anybody, run pass splits. The pass amount is crazy than the ratio. So to me, I think you're going to have one or two linebackers out there most times anyhow. It's just you better. I'm glad it's at home. Because
I don't know that. Yeah, I'm glad it's at home too.
No, because there's going to be a lot of Giants fans in the stands.
No,
this is how this works. So it's going to be pretty quiet when the Giants take the field. It's sold out for this week, and it's sold out for next Thursday. I think that has a lot to do with the transients and the people wearing the red and blue, not the red and pewter.
I agree with you in terms of its impact on the game. It being sold out and it being in Tampa. anymore. We don't count home field the way that we once did. I don't know why that's changed so much. It just has. Around the league, home teams lose all the time, especially to teams that aren't any good. It's crazy. You see it left and right. You're like, how's that happening? How'd the Bears just – any of these teams, it's crazy, right?
It's just – I don't think the Giants believe their season's over yet, and they're 0-3, so you have an angry bunch coming down versus a beaten bunch, physically speaking, in Tampa. And we'll see what the personnel groupings look like. But, I mean, get ready for those 2:30 p.m. inactives and see if any big names are on there that you didn't expect.
So last week, as we were concluding the Scuttlebucks, I took Minnesota to beat us. I wasn't happy about it, but I didn't trust that this team was mature enough to go on the road and get a win, and they didn't.
Well, it wasn't just maturity. They weren't good enough.
No, they weren't good enough, but I wasn't sure about that either, but I was 50-50 on that, but I didn't trust them in terms of maturity, and you know, I didn't know we were going to have as many people get hurt and be inactive, and we didn't know at the time we did it Grimes was out, so that's
right.
that's
that
a big deal.
Huge.
If we had known that, I think we would have said, well, this is going to be kind of a lost cause.
Yeah, if you had known that Quan, Grimes, and Baker are all out.
Right, I mean, yeah, it's a tough call.
That's
All right, so here's my problem. I don't like them to win this game. You know, and I know how – this is where the fan – couples with what I want to happen and what I, what I'm assessing here with what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is a snowball problem here. We've got some real problems on defense with the personnel because of injuries. If guys can't play, they're starters for a reason. You can't win.
Yeah.
If the Bucks win this game, they're going to win it because they score in the 30s. Let's just say that. If the Bucks are going to win this game, Jameis in this offense, they've got to score in the 30s because I think they're going to once again give up a lot of points. Once again, I think the Giants are going to, or any starting quarterback worth his salt, is going to be able to make plays because we can't get to them. And I have a hard time imagining the Bucs winning this game. And I know people say, well, the Giants are 0-3. Listen, man, kid makes a 61-yard field goal, or they may very well be 1-2. I know that game would have gone to overtime, but still. It's the NFL. 0-2 teams won all over the place last week. It happens. I hope you're right. My faith is in the fact that maybe, or my hope is in the fact that maybe they do think their season's over. Because historically speaking, 0-3 teams are going nowhere. And it's a veteran team. So if enough of those veterans know that you don't come back from 0-3 in the NFL to do anything, then maybe they're going through the motions. But if they believe there's still hope,
right,
then the Bucs are going to have to really play well, and they're going to have to score in the 30s to win.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, because actually I did say I don't think they think their season's over.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I hope that – well, yes, okay.
I think the Giants come in a motivated team as well.
Right, no. If they, yes, and I hope you're wrong is what I meant to say. You're
okay,
right.
Gotcha.
Because if you believe that they think they can still accomplish something this year – and, oh, by the way, any Giants coaches that are listening to the Scuttlebucks, good on you. You know you got no chance. Stop coaching this team like they're invested. Stop coaching this team like you know you're going. So you're not going anywhere. You're 0-3. You're garbage. You can't run the football. You're winning 4 games. This doesn't need to be one of them.
So would it qualify this whole week as a misery podcast?
Merriment misery. Yeah, we can kick it. I like our field goal kicker. And Godwin, you like Godwin?
Well,
there's
yes.
Your merriment. Go on, cue it. Cue it.
Okay.
And now, merriment and misery.
We can't even let the music play because we're up against it. But there you go.
There it is.
Nick Folk,
gone.
Yeah, Nick Folk. All right, good on you, buddy. Making kicks. You're a pro's pro. Glad we got that going for us. And Godwin, yep.
I like
you can give him a player.
Yes,
a player.
I like him, and there's a couple of reasons. Just standing next to him in person, he looks like he can take the wear and tear of the
kid,
NFL a little bit better than I thought. You just look at 6'1", and you say, I don't think so. But then you stand next to him, you say, and you look at him compared to Evans.
Body
and
type,
especially,
right?
You know, little ass DeSean Jackson. But Godwin will fight for a football now. You know, you talked about it in the first segment. If Jameis underthrows Godwin badly in
he'll
the end zone,
he'll try to go get it.
He'll try to go get it.
This is my problem.
Just because Jameis throws an awful deep ball in that moment
doesn't mean it has to be picked.
Doesn't mean that DeSean can't put up a fight there.
He just jogs.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen this from guys we've covered up here before.
Mm-hmm.
There's one on the team now.
Yeah.
Man, you got to go fight for the ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a first baseman picking a bad throw from third. Not every bad throw from third towards the bag has to result in air.
Yeah.
Make a play.
Yeah, totally.
Make a play.
Also, Merriman, I just wanted, I do need to do this and throw out a sincere thank you to Nelson Luis from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for allowing me to
good
cover the
you,
game
Nelson.
On the road.
Good job, buddy.
He's vouching for me on the road. See, you know, usually the home teams issue the credentials, but he vouched for me on the road and he let me cover the game. So I appreciate the exposure. I wish we used any audio, but it was such a cut and dry game.
There was not much to use there.
You're getting cliche fests and dudes that just want to get on the bus 5 minutes ago.
I will say this. The quarterback said hello to the Scuttlebuck. Said hello to the show.
He did.
Said hello to me. I appreciate that. Said hello to you. That's nice. Good stuff. All right. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks. Hopefully we're talking about a big win over the Giants. And then we'll tackle the Patriots. Got to win this one.
If you've got adjustments, now's the time for the adjustments.
Mike, need some adjustments
looking
here.
Looking at you, Mike.
I'd like one of those deadbeat running backs to show up even reasonably. So, I mean, this game, just give me a little something.
Let's line up Gerald McCoy at defensive end.
Oh, gosh, what a downer today's Scuttlebucks was. Good job, Tom. Thanks, Lee. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.